replaced. And then that man became a man of such dignity and hope, a man who spent years, you know, in India, and years with the gurus, and years, and was Sermon on the Mount. He married a woman on the mount who was to die very suddenly right after they got married, and to walk through all that in recovery, to be a shining beacon for so many of us. And this guy, what he would do is, he would take so many of us who were just broken little children who were out there trying to be tough, and he made us try to go roller skating on Venice Beach, and we realized, how many of you have in the last week flung a kite, gone to the park, not with your kids, but when the kids are home by yourself and swung on the swings, or dug some sand, you know, and, or made a sandcastle? This is what Overeaters Anonymous is about, letting us just play, blowing bubbles. I tried to give the girls I sponsor bubbles. What a great way to have them learn to be quiet and to begin the art of the 11th step. Because if you take those bubbles, you got to be quiet while you go, and then you start trying to catch them, and you get lost in silence, chasing these little bubbles. So what I'm trying to let you know is there's such little things you can do here. But with doing these little things one day, you do own your own condo and you do stand up as a woman of dignity. I'm a woman. I would see you coming across Westwood Boulevard on the street where my home was. And I would run to the other side of the street, but it shouldn't embarrass you that you have to tell your family member that you know me, you know. And to be able to walk through Century City and work for where I worked for so many years. I remember at LA Magazine, I was in advertising, and they told me that, no, my sponsor, you have to quit that job. You have to work 9 to 5, and you have to go to meetings and be a worker among workers. What? But it's in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you really want to recover, you have to give up your playgrounds, playthings, and playmates. When would you have time to do all this quiet and do all this changing, you know? And this was just for me in the circumstances that I came from, particularly being a 100-pounder. You know, the enormity and the gravity of how far I had taken myself down. And then I began to accept things as acceptable that weren't acceptable. Because when your bar is so far down, if you're living with a man who beats you and tells you a fat pig, and now you live with one who just is rude to you, you think he's amazing, and you run after him when he's in bars to find him to get him out, because you're afraid you're going to lose him, and you spend, you have to have 2 cell phones, one to track him down all the time, and one for you, you know? And that's how I live my life, and that's how I parented those children. So, does it not make sense? Between 35 and 40 is the average age the child of us falls apart. Would they not be exposed to Alateen and Alicot? Would we not be exposed to other 12-step programs that are designed to teach us about living with our families? You know? So for those of you who have had the courage to walk all of Overeaters Anonymous and to expand yourself into Al-Anon and into Codependence Anonymous, for me personally, and this is just my feeling, my problem was never food, even though I was 300 pounds. My problem was always about boundaries and being hurt too easily and being sensitive and everything being taken the wrong way and you misunderstanding my verbiage. I'm a very passionate kid and I get really into things. And often it's taken like I'm taken over, or it's really just trying to spread this word. You know, it's really about just such excitement about being alive, you know, just discovering at 67 that, my God, you know, so you don't have a boob, and you got this wrong, and this is happening, and, but you know, it all started because when you lose 150 pounds, you have a lot of skin. And for that, I had to learn to be very quiet, because some of my friends had some very serious surgeries, and their scars ended up to be more of a problem than my skin is. But the truth is, one day, the rest of my life, I will always weigh 30 pounds more than anybody else, because I have a lot of skin, you know. But basically, I ate those tuna and string beans, and I ate those vegetables, and the food that you eat has a lot to do with how your skin tightens up. But for me, I had to get very quiet and calm to be able to accept myself and to be able to realize, my God, you know. The people who look at me and say, what's that? They're not who I need to run around with. I've got to run like a hotcake. Instead, what I do is stay there and try to make you think it's okay. And the truth is, people leave my wellness. They do not leave me because I'm sick anymore. People who are ill and are afraid to do what we have to do here do not be around somebody, want to be around somebody who's given up at 6 o'clock in the morning to go look for roses and talk to God, you know. It's just not what they want to do. And if you really read the second step in the Alcoholics Anonymous 12 and 12, oh God, I pray all of you do. It talks about that, again, about how only a drowning man would want to be quiet.
Only a drowning man would run out of work every hour on the hour, and instead of thinking about what's for lunch, he would be running out there and looking at a tree and looking. Did you know that every tree has leaves that are different shades? There's about 50 colors of green, you know, and I started to get really into all these things that God made, and I asked people I was sponsoring in their mirror to give me 100-word things they're grateful for. Well, I have a brother who's blind, and so you'd be surprised how many people don't even put that they can see on the list. And it's all about they're grateful for their boyfriends and for their money and their credit cards and their cars. But the people, places, and things, if you knock them off, there's very little left, you know, like stones and brooks. And this is the change, but I had to be quiet to walk around and see these things. So for me, this 11th step, I understand now why the first 10 are the actual steps we take to be able to get rid of the food, to be able to get rid of so many of the actions we take. But the 11th step is the step that begins to give us the ability to sustain this recovery, that begins to give us the knowledge to know what's not healthy for us. Because often things seem really good to me that are really dangerous, you know. And forever that will be a part of my history. You know, I can be as calm and cool and marvelous as can be, but something happens that has nothing to do with me, and I can fall apart because that's how my family was. I am so much like my mom and so much like my dad. And again, she died chained down in a nursing home from Alzheimer's, smoking and drinking, and I'm so grateful that she started doing all this when she was in her 80s because she gave me some credibility, because I was the identified sick person in our family. And when my father killed himself, and my father was found walking in the street trying to kill himself when he lost a lot of money because he thought my mother would be a rich woman if he died young. And eventually he succeeded. And my mother started chain smoking and drinking to the point where she started a fire in the nursing home for Alzheimer's, and they had to take all those old people out in the middle of the night. And she thought it was cute. She didn't have Alzheimer's. She had dementia brought on by alcoholism. And her alcoholism was always very sneaky and in very small doses, but I knew. I always knew. But it's a wonderful thing to know that your family is out there, you know, and that this came, there's a root to this that has nothing to do with you. So the truth is, for every one of us, I think that the most important thing for me has been the simplicity of the little things that I can do to just stay so completely quiet. So what is prayer? What is meditation? Why are they way back at step 11? Prayer for some is asking for God's help. For me, daily prayer caused a remarkable thing to happen to me. Before surrendering to daily prayer, I prayed mostly when I hurt. When I was in a car crash, when somebody left me, when somebody died, and even more when I hurt a lot. But the good news here, I didn't eat and gain back 100 pounds. But I did pray when I hurt. I learned that if I prayed regularly and developed spirituality, that I would not hurt as often nor as intensely. What a concept, to be proactive rather than reactive. A great gift of prayer meditation. Meditation for many is listening for God's answer. I think I need to remind everybody that most skilled people were not born with their skills. It took a lot of effort on their part to develop and practice them. Thus we do this program, thank God, one day at a time. Without the 11th step, I'm reminded of the time I went down a water slide at a theme park. I suddenly found myself covered completely in water. I seemingly could not breathe nor see. I started to thrash wildly and became paralyzed with fear. When suddenly, two very small, tiny little six-year-old boys lifted up my head. They looked at me and said to me, "Lady, you're only in 6 inches of water." It was then I realized I could have stood up all the time. Without abstinence, as a compulsive overeater like myself, I would have drowned in a panic. But with 11 steps for these last 34 years, I do have a chance to get, quite often, that moment of clarity. And I'm looking at Sandy, so I do have to say, sometimes I have to make those calls. to somebody like her. And she's like I was for 34 years. I was at that French Press Group, a receptionist for LA Magazine, and everybody knew because, boy, I had 12 and 12. I walked around at lunch. I wore signs. I had things all over my... I wanted you to know I was in recovery. It's the only thing I ever did that I was proud of, you know. And what a great gift to have a friend like that, that you know where she is, and you can get her, and she knows by your voice, you know. And for these last 5 years or so that I've been blessed with her friendship, it's really changed my life. To have, you know, it's one thing, and one time we get caught up in that here, we give too much. But to have somebody that can give back to you, that's been a whole new thing for me, and a very important thing to change my program. So, in helping others, I'm going to go back to where I was here. More importantly, without the 11th step, there would be no chance we could ever experience that spiritual awakening. Without putting spiritual principles into my life as a way of living, I could not carry that sufficient message that I talked about in the beginning to attract others into recovery, which, after all, is promised us will be, if we clean house and trust God, our primary purpose. It is in helping others that the promises finally do come true. It's in helping others that I have found a purpose for my life. In helping others freely, I enjoy a life full of endless spiritual wealth. Partnering with God, spiritual wealth. It's not about cars, jobs, men, things. It's about spiritual wealth. And the book promises that it can be endless. Because I have now partnered with God one day at a time forever. But for me, God works for the people. So when I call Sandy or I call April, I believe I am, or I call Miriam, so far away in that beautiful area where she lives out in Westlake and Agoura, what wonderful meetings they have out there. And the gift that we get to travel and speak in places all over the country, you know, and really see that this thing is so universal and so big. I wish for all of you a trip to Albuquerque to World Service. When you see them say the Serenity Prayer in all these languages, you understand what we've got here. Something so huge, you know. And my prayer on this tape to everybody who's listening is that we bring our religion back to its beginning. When people held each other's hand and we didn't go out looking for fat people, we're not going to run out of them, you know. The truth is that we held each other's hand and we were there for each other, you know. That we called the old-timers and respected them, and we called the newcomers and tried to do. But we gave the newcomers 3 minutes of the problem, and we said to them, do you want to get into a solution? Otherwise, I'm going to give you 100 names, but I can't listen to you anymore, because I'm in recovery, and it's too much for me. And the truth is that when you're ready to do this thing, and I love what we were taught from Gene Smith, who was our spiritual guide and my sponsor for so long, you know, was my sponsor for so long. I can't say her name. I always gag. I did not cry when my mom died or my dad died. I didn't have too much of a reaction at those, ever. But when Jean died, I found great comfort because her meditation was always going down to the beach. And she looked for these beautiful places, and she went every week. And every Sunday, she went down to Manhattan Beach, which she loved. It was very clean and pristine and beautiful. And down at that beach, she put that in her mind. So wherever she was when there was trouble, she could walk outside and put herself there. And that was her first meditation. And then she went and she got rocks and she would throw them into the ocean. And she would try to stop the waves. And the people in AA told her, well, when you stop those waves, you can stop working these steps. Because then you're in charge. And these are wonderful meditative things for somebody like I who needs to have very simplistic things to do on a constant basis. So I want to end this by telling you that in helping others, the promises do come true. In helping others, I have really found a purpose in my life. I see Tammy here, I can just cry because God knew if you had any chance. She so much like I, you know, but in gracing with children and the relationship and all that stuff, it wasn't a lot of people who did that well here that had little children, you know, with the Girl Scout cookies. And it was just to say, when they counted their candy and separated at the first Halloween, it was very hard, you know. This has nuts, this is just chocolate, yeah. But that's just typical of having kids. You got to deal with the food, and that's how it is. Maybe that's why I had such a very rigid abstinence. It was simple, you know. But I enjoy a full life of endless spiritual wealth. Again, I'm going to ask for each and every one of you, and I'm going to come back at the very end of this, and what I'm going to lead us through is a very simple, beautiful building God's house, which was the very first meditation ever taught to Roseanne from the great women of Alcoholics Anonymous, from Dottie Shore, from Alabama, and so many of them who came and founded Overeaters Anonymous. So you're going to hear the very first meditation that sustains Roseanne till this day, that not too many people know, okay? And I would like to ask that may God sleep in the hollow of all your pillows.
Thank you, Nancy. So how do I use meditation in my life? First of all, I'm going to ask for three groups of people. One is, who has never meditated? I'd just like to see hands. Who's never meditated? So just a couple out of 50, maybe four or five. Who has meditated occasionally? So the majority of you, okay. And who regularly meditates? Oh, that's quite a few of you. Okay, so just want to get a sense of that. So I am Jewish, and I was raised in a non-spiritual but very religiously warm house where I really didn't know that Jews had a God, but I knew we had food and music and a lot of hugging and a lot of talking, and it was chewy and warm and wonderful, and I felt safe. And when I first came to Overeaters Anonymous, because I was raised by essentially socialists where religion is the opium of the people, it was a real struggle for me that to come into these rooms and maybe find some kind of a God maybe meant I was more separate from my family, that there was less something I had in common, and there was like a Grand Canyon between us in terms of understanding. It was very frightening for me. I started by picturing, through the help of sponsors who asked me to write about it, a chair on a theater stage with one light on it, and on that empty chair I could put like a Santa Claus sack of worries, and I could walk away from it. So that chair became my God. In other words, and I had a God box, which was a simple box where I could write down problems that I didn't know how to handle and put them in the box and let them go. And it was the beginning of me learning that I wasn't omnipotent, that I didn't control your life or my sister's life, that I wasn't responsible, letting go. I was told that during the Holocaust, many of the leaders of Jewish meditation were killed. And so the generation of young people who were brought up as Jews in the 50s and 60s were not necessarily taught any kind of meditation, because we missed out on that, because that part of our religion was missing, possibly. Which is why you'll find a lot of Jew-boos, Jewish Buddhists. I have always been someone who, when I was 13, I made a little altar in my closet, and I prayed to the Greek and Roman gods that I just learned about in English class, because I thought that was fair game. And my father was a farmer in Northern California, so I prayed to Ceres, goddess of agriculture, because I thought, okay, that's good. I had a little piece of wheat that I prayed to. But so, and again, it was just sort of a slow coming to. And for me, I'm not actually sure there's a God. For me, what it's true is that I picture my life on the sidewalk, and when I take some chalk and I draw a little circle and I step into it, pretending there was a God, my life works better. But I can step out of it any time, and that's fine. But as I slowly build that, it's more than pretend, and it really seems to work. When I was there, I was sick for many years, and my acupuncture suggested I learn meditation, but I was terrified, and I actually told her I would rather climb Mount Everest. Because just like Nancy, sitting still was frightening to me. Silence is frightening. There's so much jabber in my head. And to me, that's related to the fact that I need to be grounded. So when Nancy was talking about bubbles or about going outside, I'm a writer, and there's so much I do in terms of typing on the computer that has nothing to do with grounding and petting my dog and going to the dog park or hiking or digging in the dirt for my garden or hugging my husband. When he comes home, I'm just really trying to make him a priority over catching up on email. It's hard. But he's the flesh and blood grounding. So to me, the grounding is related to the spirituality. Every personality is different. I think that many Overeaters Anonymous might be able to identify with me. I feel like we're very sensitive and that we have this incredible antenna and we pick up stuff, which is why I believe I'm a night person, because when things quiet down, literally the earth quiets down. But I have this amazing antenna, and I used to think I was making up pictures in my mind. Why am I suddenly seeing a foot or lipstick or a couch or, you know, a cauliflower? Now I always thought, I once went to the seance, and the guy who was leading it said, okay, I believe everybody is spiritual and that we all can help each other make this work. And he said, so I want someone to talk about a relative who's passed over and put them on a chair in the center of the room, and if any of us have a thought, we should just say it. And I thought, this is ridiculous. This is so stupid. I can't even believe he's having us do this. And I wouldn't say anything for a while. And then one woman had her aunt there who died of cancer. And suddenly I saw a high heel, a shoe and a high heel. And I thought, I'm just going to prove to them how stupid this is. So I said, I see a shoe and a high heel. She said she collected high heels. You know, and I drove away from that thinking, okay, so maybe what I'm picking up is really stuff. I may never understand what it is. But it gave it a little bit more weight for me. So now when I meditate, okay, so here's what I'm going back to. I'm exactly what I'm supposed to be doing, exactly what I'm supposed to be doing, doing exactly right. I was taught, and I don't want this to frighten anyone, but I was taught that the first 20 minutes of meditation is just clearing out the thoughts that are part of you. It doesn't mean that 5 minutes of meditation is not valuable. And I want to keep saying that because I don't want that to keep you from meditating. But when I heard that, I thought, all right, let me try that. With the understanding, then that helps me when I'm sitting and all these things are jangling in and all these weird images or nothing, and I'm feeling like I'm not even getting that. I'm not so judgmental, and I wait, and sometimes, not always, I get to a place that's very quiet where there's that cobalt moon or where's this dark, wonderful space for me just to be quiet, because it is, as Nancy has said, a place of listening. You know, they say in science, intermittent gratification is the most successful way to train the rats. In other words, if a rat's getting food all the time, that's not so great in terms of training as every once in a while when it's unpredictable. And I think that's the only reason why I keep meditating, because it's so damn unpredictable for me. I can't always get there, wherever there is, but the time that I do, it's like I can only say the word delicious. It's my whole body is just golden. It feels so good. And how has it changed me? I'm still talking about some other things. I'll get back to how do we use meditation in our lives. So Nancy talked about the trees. Years ago, I met a man named Clark in program when I was newly married, and I am still in love, but I was so like newly in love. He said, I believe that your husband is above God for you, and you may want to reverse that order. And so I actually went out and took a ring from my jewelry box, and I had a ring for my husband and a ring for God, and that helped. So whenever I saw the ring, it made me think about that. Someone else told me that when they're driving down the street and they see the little bumps in the road that define, you know, that tell your car not to go over the road, that every time they see those, they think about God, just to trigger something to think about God. And as Nancy, that breathing part is also really interesting, because I don't really think I breathed when I was little. I really think I was always yawning at night, yawning, 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 because my body, I think, just didn't know how. And when I talked about breathing, you can't say everything in a short workshop, but what I was taught was when I take a deep breath and preparing for meditation or any time, if I hold it a little bit longer than I want to, it feeds my brain. The oxygen actually holds, it goes more places, and then I let it out. So it's like deep breath in, hold, out. So that's just something else. Here's my schedule. People say, how do you fit it into your life? And because I'm a freelance writer, I have a lot more flexible time than many of you. But I try to fit it in little tiny places where, for example, I have weak wrists. And my chiropractor, another one of my staff, as my husband would say, wanted me to do all these exercises. And I wasn't going to do the goddamn exercise, because I don't do exercises unless I'm in an exercise class. And then I'll do whatever they tell me to. But I could feel like I really was not able to do some of the stuff in my exercise class. So what I do is when I leave exercise class, I pass a particular weightlifting thing in the gym, and I stop right there, and I do have like 2 minutes worth of exercise, you guys. It's like not awful. And that triggers me to do my wrist exercises. So I build it in. In the same way where I said that, meditation is a very active and energized state rather than an almost asleep state. I try to build in meditation right after exercise. And what I do in our gym, and again, because I have time in my life, right after I'm like all sweaty from the exercise class, there are some yoga rooms in our gym that are not used. I've since gotten permission. For a long time, though, I just snuck into the rooms, closed the door. They happen to have yoga mats and meditation pillows. And I would meditate there, prior to that I was meditating in my house, but the cats would always come and the phone would ring, or I'd be outside. That place works for me, and it also triggers it, and it becomes part of my workout. And again, for you, if you're new, if it's frightening, it doesn't have to be more than 2 minutes. But to build it in, right after brushing your teeth, or whatever works for you. When I was outside, there was something wonderful about that. And one of the things I need to do is, as a very sensitive person to light and sound and all that stuff, I take, in the 60s we wore hair bands. So I have a black hair band and I put it around my eyes. Or I take a blanket and put it over me. I need it to be extremely dark. I think about Michael Jackson, who used that weightless water tank that he got in, and I just thought that would be ideal for me. I just need there to be no outside sound. On the other hand, when I'm outside meditating and a lawnmower goes up and I get tense and I think it's not supposed to be, another way to reframe that is that's also God's noise. And maybe there's a reason I'm supposed to hear it. It's all part of, I'm here. I'm exactly in the right place, doing exactly the right thing, hearing exactly what I'm supposed to be hearing. It goes back to such gentle forgiveness of the situation and of myself. So how has it changed me really quickly? So I think I'm calmer. Some of that is hormones. I'm older. I'm just older. I know that I'm more honest. A lot of that is influence of program, of growing older and understanding all that, having loving people in my life. But here's a quick example from this week. I'm in a master class for writing a novel. The people in this class frighten me. There's only 8 of them. And every once in a while, we have to read each other's novels, and I'm a slow reader, critique them, in other words, go through and make markings, and then write at least a one-page critique. It's frightening. It's frightening to critique someone else's work, and you want to do a good job, and you want to impress them, and I, particularly new to the class, want to make a good impression. I have been taking care of my 90-year-old uncle, and there's been a lot of issues. I had a major surgery a week and a half ago, and rehab, and lots of phone calls, and I am his designated health care provider. So I had many legitimate reasons why I hadn't finished it. What I wanted to do was not go to the class, and I wanted to just email in and say, I'm really sorry, I'll send you my email, and I'll mail it to you, because I knew I was going to do it. Or, when I got myself to class, I wanted to tell her all about my uncle. Poor me, the victim. But instead, I just walked in and I said, I haven't quite finished it. I'd be glad to mail it to you, and may I email you my comments. And she was disappointed, and it didn't matter. It was just human, life, sorry. But what's new for me, because I'm usually pretty honest, what's new for me is I didn't get into that victim thing. Poor me, I'm taking care of Uncle Davey. Here's one more example. I can set boundaries. Nancy talked about boundaries. The rehab center this week really needed my signature on his admission. Of course, they had taken 4 days to get to me when they called. And I have a very, very busy, potentially stressful week coming up. I know from being ill in the past that I know to be preventive and to be kind to myself and to say to myself or to say to others, for my health, I need not to do that, or for my health, I need to cancel, or whatever I need to do. For, I don't have to do it waiting to get sick. I can do it preventively. So when she said, you have to come down here and find it, and it's Fairfax and Melrose, and I live in Manhattan Beach, I said, well, that's not going to happen, so how else can you get me those forms? Can you email them to me? Can you fax them? Can you mail them? And she said, oh, kind of put off, and then we dealt with it. So, anyway, this has changed me in a lot of ways. I really appreciate you being here, and may you find the best you can on your own journey, and I think that really the operative word is be gentle. Thank you.
We're going to make this really close. This is a piece de resistance. This is something that once you have heard this, will stay with you the rest of your life, I promise you. We're going to shut the lights and we're going to build God's house. This is the very first thing that when Alcoholics Anonymous, when Gamblers Anonymous told Roseanne they would help us, they took us to Alcoholics Anonymous and we were given a charter to have their traditions and their steps. And this is the very first thing they taught Roseanne to teach us. We're going to try to build a place where no matter what happens, no matter what's going on in your life, real or not real, a place that you can go to always be safe and be peaceful and to be alone with God no matter what. So I'd like all of you to try to find a location that seems peaceful for you. Maybe by the shore. Maybe in the mountains or the forest. Maybe on a city street, if you like, lots of noise. If you found a location, picture yourself walking on the path to this new, beautiful location. Are you on rocks, on pebbles, on sand? Are you surrounded by trees or flowers? Because you can put in whatever you want. Do you hear the ocean? Do you hear birds? Are there animals? Do you think you're going to have a cottage or a bungalow or a hut? Kind of think about where you want this room to be. Now, think about putting up a wall. Will the wall be of wood? Do you want bricks or stucco? Do you think you're going to have a lot of windows? Picture windows, small windows? Remember, you're building your room to be safe. Remember that you've put in maybe flowers outside and trees that are going to grow and be beautiful. So put in your windows. Now think about if you want a fireplace. Would that be something? Do you like the warmth or do you like it cold? So put in a fireplace if you want. Now put in music. And do you want to have music? If you want to have music, put in some speakers and a little stereo and think about the songs that you would want to play if you had your own little space. And think that you can hear those songs kind of playing in the background. And think about books. Maybe you're going to spend some time trying to connect to God when you go to be safe. So maybe you want to have a couple of shelves, or maybe you want to put some things that were very special to you that you never had a chance to read or that you were going to remember the time the rest of your life always have to refer to, but you kind of stopped carrying them around. You can get them back now. Now, do you want to have some knickknacks? Do you have some places you have visited that maybe now that you're in recovery you're looking at things differently and there'll be some good memories from them? Maybe a picture of somebody from the past, or maybe a time at the shore in Atlantic City, you picked up a stone and threw them away or gave them up. So you can put little knickknacks around. If you can go back and think a little bit about what may at some time have been a doll that you held or a blanket that you loved. Or building a room that's safe and secure with things that nobody can take away from you anymore. Now it's time for furniture. Do you want a comfortable chair, a soft cushion chair, a couch? This is whatever you want. You want a big TV? Or even better, no TV. Do you want to have lots and lots of quiet? Do you want to have lots of lights, or just a little fluorescent light, or maybe a spotlight several places? This is whatever will make you warm and fuzzy. Do you want to have a favorite pet? April's mentioned how great it is to pet a pet before you start meditating. So maybe you want to have some kind of a pet, maybe a bird. Now you need to think about having a roof. So think about putting a roof and closing in that room. Now we very quietly and quickly have tried to build a house or a little room where you can go at any time, on any day, to be alone with your God. You have built a place to go in any emotional storm, to be still, to hear your breath, and to find peace and calm. May you use that room forever and always to help you find that moment of clarity that will lead you toward lasting peace and serenity. And we're going to quietly kind of open our eyes. And know that we can always go back there with a gift Overeaters Anonymous has just given us today. Thank you. Let's close with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, to change the things I can, and listen to heaven.